I think that the technical term is double entendre.
Ah, yes.
We've added Michael. You saw him walk by earlier, but now you can hear him.
We apologize. No.
Yeah. I'm the cool one.
Oh, okay.
This is from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
This is what he says in...
I'm so cool, you could store meat in me for 6 months.
Nice.
I'm so hip, I have trouble seeing beyond my pelvis.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Do those work?
Well, if you're trying to pick up girls, no.
Okay.
Guys, maybe different. I don't know.
It works on androgynes.
Oh, all right. Probably very popular at Dragon Con.
Have you been to the fair lately?
No.
Something tells me he really didn't want to go.
There was something in the Hutch paper about some type of boat ride that's a horror.
Oh, yeah. Attraction. Yeah, they were making a big deal about that on the news.
Not a horror attraction, but a horror attraction.
Right. Huh? What?
Yeah, sample our famous horrors at the Kansas State Fair.
Wow, Richard, jeez.
Next to fried butter.
Deep fat fried butter.
You have to remember the second or.
And welcome to another edition of Mini Pop. I'm here. I'm Richard, along with
Chris,
Matt,
April,
Logan,
Michael.
And we also have a special guest. We have C. Michael Hall with us today. We're going to be talking about his creation, and he wrote El Dorado. So thank you for joining us again, Michael.
Oh, thanks for having me again.
Again. Too many double entendres going on.
Like triple and quadruple entendre there.
Yeah. To give the information, El Dorado actually began as a three-issue miniseries. It was collected in 2012, and of course, Ape Entertainment is the publisher. And Michael is the writer, C. Michael Hall. The artist was Martin Cocolio?
I think that's close.
Okay.
Yeah.
Colors were Diego Rodriguez, and was there a mention of letters? Letters was, Darren Bennett?
Yeah.
And covers were by Diego and Martin as well.
Right.
Well, you didn't do any artwork on this, did you?
I didn't do any artwork on that one. It was awesome. All I had to do was write.
You just had a break.
Vacation.
Really?
People might know that artist, actually. He did some Magic the Gathering series I think it was IDW, immediately after this.
Oh, very cool.
I'll have to look at those.
Was that Diego or Martin?
Martin.
Martin? Okay. I'm not much into the magic cards, I know.
I've got a pretty big collection of them.
Okay. Got to check it out. Gave you a mission, Chris.
Yes.
Report back.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Next weekend.
This edition is $9.99, so it's a very inexpensive book that you can add to your collection for the library. The topic is a Western horror, and I was able to locate this on Amazon. They still have editions there. I believe Ape Entertainment still had some collected versions. I'm not positive, though.
I haven't checked in a long time.
I know the individual issues are still there, but...
Yeah.
Amazon still had, I think, about 30 that they had available. So, if not, there's always the good old eBay. You can check it out there. Some libraries have actually done that venture when they can't find some items. And basically, do you want me to describe it, or would you like to, Michael?
Oh, I don't know. It might actually kind of amuse me to hear you try.
Okay. Go, Richard.
We will try here. It's been a while since I've read this out. The main characters is Emma Vinton, and she's basically a Harris coming back from New York to El Dorado, Texas. Her father's just been recently murdered by a gang of, I can't remember their names.
Well, don't tell them.
Well, we're not going to give endings away. We try not to give endings away.
Yeah, we don't like to give endings away.
We have a Mr. Crane who's a gambler. The sheriff is an elder sheriff, Earl Whitman. The deputy is Bill. I never did see a last name for him.
There's a reason for that.
Okay. We have a warrior priest, Master Zhao.
Zhao.
Zhao. Okay. You're going to have to help me on these, probably. And a Mr. William Kenfield, who is a banker that comes back with Emma. So those are the main characters. We're not going to go into detail what happens. We're just going to kind of lightly go over what happens. And hopefully that's everything that to get you started. And this is one where, for me, it reminded me, and we mentioned this, we did an interview with Michael earlier. It reminded me of Star Wars. You just get plopped right down into the action right away, just like in the Star Wars A New Hope is. And there is a small intro, and that got my hopes up, which was dashed by Mike when he talked to him, that there was a possible prequel in the works. And you get all your info in that intro to begin the story. So it's very similar to Star Wars. That has the crawl to give the intro. So if you have a patron that's want to read this, you might read that little blurb, unless they just enjoy getting thrust right into the action. Boy, talk about double entendres. Okay.
Oh my God, Richard.
I'm the eldest here, believe it or not, Mike.
So you have the most experience.
Yeah.
There we go again.
El Dorado takes place in an evening, overnight, into early morning the next morning.
That's right.
And it does have a clock that portrays that. So it's a unique, it's almost kind of like, what was 24? You don't get every minute of the day, but it kind of follows that same pattern. It follows in a short period of time.
Kind of like a soap, you know, on your noontime lunch, you know.
Maybe not that
wow,
long
Chris.
Of a story, but...
Oh, come on.
Just compare to...
Why am I the only one that likes Bold and Beautiful?
I'm sure there are very big books written on that topic.
Big books, yeah.
Big damn books. Okay, who's watched, what is it?
Wagons East.
Wagons East, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I need a big damn book.
Have you watched that one, Michael?
I haven't. That has John Candy in it, right? That was his last film.
You have to watch that one. It's pretty good.
It's hilarious.
A guy goes into the bookstore and says he needs a big damn book.
Okay.
And the proprietor shows him different books and says, well, I just need a big damn book. And he goes back and he sells it to him and he starts ripping out pages because he needs to go to the outhouse. So that's that reference. But yeah, I recommend that one. That's a good comedy, and being one of Candy's last ones, that was a pretty good one. To get back to El Dorado.
Hey, this time it's not us changing the subject.
You can see how these go. We have, in the intro, the ranch is sold, and the Granger Boys are the gang that's the main antagonist in this novel. And I'll probably have to lean on you a little bit on this one, too, Michael. But they kill Mr. Winton, and they kill his maid, Lin May, and she becomes a Jiangshi. And that's basically demon / vampire. And she has some different characteristics than normal vampires. You want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, the Chinese vampire is not the skulking through the shadows bloodsucker that we're accustomed to from European folklore. This creature is a force of nature. I mean, if a Chinese vampire blows into an area, that area is desolate after that. I mean, it's you do not want this to happen. It's an apocalyptic scale monster in Chinese folklore.
And with the explanations, it goes further as you're reading the book that we have, in a sense, zombies.
Right.
I don't know if they're technically called zombies per se, but
you know, there's a. I don't think we don't use that term in the book, and there's actually another it's another phrase for them in Chinese, but I figured I was cramming enough Chinese words down the reader's throat. And I didn't use that term. But yeah, and they have the potential to become Jiangxi themselves. So.
Oh, they do. See, I didn't realize that when I was reading it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't get that either, but okay.
And basically it's a very violent, it's a spirit, a vengeance spirit, basically.
Pretty much, yeah. Right. But it, you know, it still has that corporeal form.
And I've pretty much done a lot of talking about that. It's a very painful death or violent death, and they transform. It's not like a traditional vampire where you get another smaller vampire, you know, in stature.
But, a baby vampire.
But you get... Okay, smart.
Twilight. Sorry.
Going to be one of those this time.
Yes, it is.
But they are turned into the zombie-esque creatures first, and then I guess possibly they can be turned into the... I'm going to butcher it again, Mike. I'm sorry. The Shang...
That's okay. Yeah, the vampire itself, you know, it arises from, you know, the... because the lower soul is still trapped in the body, and it's driving, you know, its base impulses, its anger, are driving the body and channeling these supernatural forces. But yeah, it's that creature's power that then make its victims rise from the grave. So it's a slightly different thing. But yeah, those creatures each have the ability to become vampires in their own right. So yeah, it's an apocalyptic scale monster in their mythology.
And I think reading through the book, I hate to ask this, but I got to. How come you never use the urine sample? When I read that, I was like, that's interesting. She burns with, what is it, virgins urine?
It was not my idea.
No virgins available there?
That's in the mythology. That's in the mythology, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not something I fabricated. It's in the mythology.
Okay.
And in the original script, there was a line where they follow up where he got the virgin urine from.
Okay, because I was going to say, where'd that come
from? Yeah, there's, I mean, the virgin, but yeah, that's in the folklore, actually. That's okay. One of the things that you can use as a weapon against them. But I'm not going to tell you where he got the virgin urine from, because that actually factors into the sequel.
Okay. I kind of see him going from house to house.
Excuse me.
Your daughter? is she pure or not?
It's like, sorry, no, she's a whore.
Well, you kind of seen this town. I mean, that would really be an issue.
Well, when I first read it, when I saw El Dorado, I wasn't thinking Texas. I was thinking Kansas, because my parents used to live in El Dorado over there by Wichita. So,
yeah, there are places called El Dorado all over the country, tons of them. And that little crawl blurb that's on the inside of the trade paperback, the weird thing is that's not the one that I picked to be there, because that's actually the one from the third issue of the original series.
Okay.
And the one I wanted there was actually the one from the first issue of the original series, where it mentions, you know, in this town of El Dorado, and then in parentheses it says, no, not that one. So that way, no matter which one they're thinking of, it's no, not that one. But yeah, apparently they were all over the place. There were multiple El Dorados in the Arizona territory. I mean, yeah, it was a very popular name, so we figured it was pretty safe to go with.
Okay. And one of the aspects of this... It's a short story, with it being three issues. If you're a comic book reader, you're familiar with that, and you're used to it, it won't be a problem. And we kind of mentioned this in the interview, with people starting to read more and more of the graphic novels. And one of the things that happened with me, with one of the persons that was reading them that was in high school, and it was a female, but it's not saying a male wouldn't do this as well. She was an avid reader. She would read it, and she was, I don't understand it. And when I kept asking her questions, it came out that she was just reading the words. And I had to sit down and say, you have to read the artwork too, sweetheart. I didn't use sweetheart. That would have been too much trouble there. But
yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, there is something to say that, you know, there are people who are conditioned to reading text. They don't realize there's a narrative in the pictures as well. Yeah. It's not just illustrated text. There's a narrative in the pictures. And that, yeah, it's not intuitive for everybody.
And we mentioned this takes place with Chinese mythology. The reason it does is because we're working in the time frame where we do have the Chinese immigrants coming over working for the railroad. And that's one of the bases for the storyline as well. They're working on the railroad at this point, if I remember right.
Yeah. Yeah, at that time they still were.
I think if you watch, what is it, Hell on Wheels, it's kind of the same time period where you have all the different backgrounds and cultures kind of meeting at the railroad work site.
I haven't actually seen that series myself yet. So
I haven't watched it either, but I think from
it
the
looks really
it looks
good,
like
but
that.
Dad doesn't want to watch it, so I don't get to watch it.
I'm not the biggest Western fan. I like
politics.
Politics. I like some Westerns. It just depends on it, but that one just didn't grab me that much. But there's one of these is with the content, I would have to say it would be geared for probably around a 15 or older. There could be some younger kids that could handle it, but for...
I don't know. It's
just... It was labeled a mature reader's title. Okay. I mean, the language is pretty rough. There's actually... The only real nude scene in there isn't too extreme.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of violence and eyeballs popping out of heads. And, yeah, if it were a film, it wouldn't have got a PG-13. It would have got saddled with an R.
Well, like I said, my kids read a little bit more than what others do. And
yeah, everybody's mileage varies.
Right. And I don't want to go into too much of the story because it is a shorter one, but the main concept is the town is basically being overrun by the zombies.
Right.
And, well, not necessarily the town. I guess it's the area.
Yeah.
Around the town. And you have two actual elements going on in the story. You have the zombie element, then you have the vampire element.
Yes.
And they diverge from each other. So you actually do have two different stories that do tie in back to each other. And when you were writing that, were you actually doing both at the same time, or did you kind of separate them and then tie them back together later?
The thing with horror is that it doesn't work with a huge cast. Because people stop being afraid. When you can all stand back to back, you don't have anything to be afraid of, really. And you'll notice that if you're watching like a zombie film and it's got this ensemble cast, it's more of an action movie when they're all together. It's when they start getting picked off one by one and they stop being a large group that it gets legitimately scary again. Okay. So that's why I split the group up. I didn't want these characters to all be in the same place at the same time because they had to be in small enough numbers that they'd be afraid because that was the only way that the horror would work for the reader.
And I have to say that this is a horror comic, like you alluded to, with the movies, you're going to have a small cast and they get picked off. Some get picked off, I'm not going to say who or anything like that, but you'll have to read the book to see who actually survives and in what condition they survive in because that has a variance too. Because there was a great scene, but I don't want to talk about it because it was one of those where I just said, ooh, and it's at the ranch house.
Yeah, I thought that's the one you were talking about. That's one of my favorites in there. Yeah.
So it was like, it was painful for me just to read it and see the image of that. I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, that had to hurt. So some of the concepts in this, you're pulling from a Western and a horror, and we mentioned in the interview you enjoy both of those. I think you enjoy the horror probably a little bit more, and you're just playing with the genre.
Yeah, that's fair. So, that's fair.
And the cover, I think even on the trade, the cover that I have is actually the one with the skull.
Okay.
And so when I looked on Amazon, they showed the cover with the actual person still there.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they did that, because it's possible that the original solicitation had the other cover.
Okay.
Like I said, I don't know. It's not my department. I write the script. I've done.
Right.
So
when purchasers go out to purchase for a library, if they're interested, if you see a different cover than what we have on the website, it's still the same thing, just different covers. So I want to make sure they understand that. And Ape Entertainment's been around about 10 years? 5 years?
Holy crap. It has been about 10 years.
Is it 10?
Yeah, it's been a while now.
This is one of the few graphic novels they have collected and put out that I'm aware of. So this was great kudos to you. I mean, that was had to be nice that you heard that
kudos.
Not just a individual, you get a... Oh, sorry, I said it wrong. What is it?
It's kudos.
I'm sorry.
Kudos. What did you say?
Kudos.
Yeah. No, they don't do it.
It was like
kudos
or something.
Really.
I don't know.
Oh, I thought he said kudos.
Nope.
Sounded good to me.
Yeah, they don't do a lot of trade paperbacks. And these days, most of their books are actually licensed products. You know, they're doing Richie Rich now, and they did Casper, and they've done tons of stuff like that. So they don't really do a lot of original properties anymore. So yeah, it was pretty exciting that, you know, that this one actually made it to market.
And when you were working with the characters on these, did you already have those within your mindset, or did you play around like some writers do and say, this is going to be this person that I know? And it's, but
you know, I almost never do that. I almost never borrow people that I actually know. When I do, it's not a good thing.
Okay.
You end up killing them.
Yeah. And it's yeah. And they're usually not going to be depicted in a very flattering light. So I very rarely do that.
You realize after this that he's going to make a comic strip and we're all going to die in it.
There you go. There's your next one, Michael.
I did actually do one book where I had people asking to be killed in it. They're like, can I be in there and be killed? And so, I mean, I accommodated and killed everybody. So
we'll be happy to have you kill us, Michael.
Okay.
Okay.
Ouch.
Don't make him mad, because we'll die in a book. And he won't make it. He'll make it a gruesome death like in the book in El Dorado. He won't make it a nice, fun, clean head chopping something.
You mean guillotine?
Yeah.
Turn us into the vampire zombies and have a samurai come and like split us down the middle. Or
it'll be an awkward, embarrassing death in a prison.
Autoerotic asphyxiation, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, nothing that you want put on your headstone.
Just
don't make me into one of those Twilight vampires. They're nauseating.
I wouldn't do that to anybody.
But you said mature rating, which he agrees with. And $9.99 is what you said? Amazon?
$10. $10. You did a discount or order with a bunch, get free shipping. You know.
Yeah.
Normal stuff.
Right.
I say put it in your library just because it supports another person who works at a library. I don't care if anybody wants to check it out or not. Just buy it anyway.
And then hide it, but tell everybody about it. That way they have to go out and buy it.
Yeah, there's an idea. Check out this really cool book. Yeah, you can have it. It's mine. Go buy it.
The waiting list is like a mile long.
It's actually circulated really well at our library. And occasionally I'll get patrons who ask, you know, do you have any more copies of that? Can I buy one from you? Yeah. So I keep a couple in my locker at work that I can sign and sell off. I feel kind of bad about doing that, but I mean, if that's what they want, it's what they want.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's circulated really well. In fact, there was one month when it was circulating as well as the Justice League, and I thought, I don't know whether to be proud of that or ashamed of that.
I'll tell you what, you sign a set for me, individual issues, and I'll purchase a set from you.
Okay. I might have some of the individuals left over, too.
But I want all three. I don't want pieces.
All right. I'll look to see what I've got.
He has to call the publisher now. Quick, run me off a set. He's going to be double. He just doesn't know it. Oh,
there you go.
Well, Mark and I know each other for, what, a couple of years now?
Yeah. Yeah, since I did the McPherson book at the very least.
And it's been a blast visiting with him all this time. And we got in touch. Matt Upton actually sent this link out on Ken Libel, or what I call Ken Libel, Ken Lib.
Yeah.
The listserv for Kansas Library Association about an auction that Michael was having for the library he works for. And I put in a bid on one of mine and actually won it. And it was a Wonder Woman original artwork, so... And he put in an extra book in there for me for, I think it's the last educational book he did. So
I can't even remember what I put in there now.
It was the one kind of modeled off the Magic School Bus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was the one I did for Emporia.
Okay.
Yep.
So I definitely appreciate that. And I'm looking for a frame now for the artwork to get that into a frame. So, and when we did the interview, I was negligent, so I'll make up for it now. Being an artist, is there a way for people to contact you to do commissions, or do you even entertain commissions?
I would love to, but I simply can't. Okay. I have way more on my plate than I can actually handle, which is a great problem to have when you're a freelancer. But yeah, it's I simply don't have time to do commissions right now.
So I got one of his works and you don't.
Yeah, which is why that auction was such a rarity. You know, it was the only reason I was able to do it was because my director said, go ahead and do it, you know, draw them during office hours. And that is literally the only reason I was able to, because I wouldn't have been able to do it at home. I have projects I have to do here that clients are waiting on. So, yeah. Otherwise, I would love to. But, I mean, they can always go to my website at AtomicRayGunComics.com.
Okay.
And on those rare instances where I do accept a commission, that's
just depends on your time.
Yep.
And with Hell Dorado, you left wiggle room so you could do a sequel.
I had literally 2 years worth of stories planned after this.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah, so. I don't know that they'll ever go to press. Okay. You know, but yeah, well, I guess it depends on whether or not the sequel sells. But yeah, I've got another dozen to 18 issues planned after that. So if they were to turn me loose, I could do this series for a long time.
If anybody likes it well enough, they can try and fund it themselves. Probably not going to work, but they can try.
About how many copies do they have to sell before it's considered a success?
You know, I'm not sure. I was told at the time that it was the most successful original property they'd ever done.
Cool.
So, I mean, compared to the licensed stuff, it didn't move, you know, a ton of numbers. But it did better than every series they had done that wasn't licensed up to that point. So I don't even know what that means, because I suck at paying attention to the numbers and I don't care. I do the script, I walk away. It sounds ridiculous, but I don't pay a lot of attention to the business angle of it.
As long as
which
the
is probably
check keeps
why
coming well,
it's a good idea that I'm not a publisher anymore.
I was going to say, as long as the checks keep rolling in, right?
Yeah, if I get paid, I'm happy. Yeah. And if the and as long as I'm happy with the end result of the book, and that I feel like people walk away with the entertainment experience I was hoping they would walk away with, yeah, I call that a win.
Well, this is one I mentioned. I'm not a big fan of Westerns, but this one drew me immediately to me because of the horror aspect.
It keeps you interested. The story definitely did keep me interested. I got about, I think I had a week plus at work to read that. And Richard knows how my week goes with my children, so I am unbelievably busy at night, and I got about halfway through the book, and it was very entertaining.
I'm not a huge horror fan, but I did like the artwork. Blood and gore is just not my thing.
Do they actually study anatomy to get the gore right when they draw it?
This guy did.
Wow.
Yeah, like I said in the interview, his research was meticulous, and I mentioned that we had tried another artist at a much earlier time, and I kept having to tell that guy, dude, more gore. And I think he was too busy looking at mainstream American comics and thinking he couldn't do these things. And I'm saying things like, can we have an eyeball pop out of this head here? And but Martin, yeah, his stuff, it really looks like people ripped up. It was pretty impressive.
So right there is a point. If anybody likes gore, get the book.
Yeah. Anatomically really cool correct stuff. Gore.
Yeah, and, there we
yeah,
go.
That's right.
And I have to mention, I like what you did with Billy. I enjoyed that. So.
Yep. And that's really all you can say about that.
That's all I can say about that. That's all. You'll have to pick up the book and read it and find out. But it was a...
Hanging that carrot out there again
yes.
for everybody.
Of course.
Buy the book.
Or check it out at your local library. If it's available. Or if not, there is interlibrary loan where they can order it from other libraries. We have it in ours. You mentioned it's in your library, so copies are out there.
Yeah, in fact, there are a couple of copies. We have a pretty good-sized consortium here in southeast Kansas, so about 40 of the regional libraries, you know, just transfer things back and forth. You don't even have to go through ILL. We share a union catalog.
Okay.
So, yeah, we've got a couple copies that move around.
And this is one where it just grabbed me from the very beginning. And if you like the spaghetti westerns with a horror mix, and I grew up with my father watching the spaghetti westerns, and I was like you, Michael, we mentioned or before that, you know, you grew up reading horror. I was sci-fi with horror mixed in. So mix those two together, and it was like, it's me and my dad put together. This is good memories.
May I ask another artistic question?
Sure.
Do you think this work owes anything to the classic EC comics?
I think it's hard to do any horror comics without tipping your hat, even subconsciously, to the EC comics, because they so defined the visual language of horror comics. I don't know that you can do horror comics without occasionally going there, unless you're working in a really, in such a radically different style, like, say, you know, Charles Burns. You know, I mean, you wouldn't compare any of his stuff to EC just because his line work is so completely different. And there are some people who don't even realize that what he's doing could be described as horror. But yeah, any kind of visceral, textural, in-your-face horror comic, is it's going to reference EC occasionally, even if the artist doesn't mean it to.
Do you think that most of our audience would know what that means?
I don't know.
I hope so.
I hope so.
I spend an entire lecture during my semester-long class. I spent an entire lecture talking about the horror comics of the 1950s.
Oh, very
cool. So, and I'm so always surprised at how few people in the class, even people who are into comics, realize what that is.
Now, have you heard of the book The 10-Cent Plague?
10-Cent Plague is fantastic. I love that book. It's a good one, and it's one that the college I teach at actually keeps that on reserve in the library, so my students can always read it.
That's another book you can check out, because it's really cool. It's about, I mean, those comic books were almost banned, weren't they? I mean, not quite.
Almost. If it hadn't been for the rise of the Comics Code Authority, there may have been outside regulation. And we all know how outside regulation of an art form tends to affect an art form, by which I mean kills it.
True.
So, yeah.
That is true.
Hey, do you still teach?
I do. Not this semester, but I'm teaching next semester.
Do you do online classes?
I haven't done one yet. I'm not sure how that would work, because we do a lot of hands-on drawing. So,
man.
Yeah.
Robotic arms. He puts his arm in one of those sleeve things, and the robot arm on the other end of the computer, you know, grabs your wrist and says, "No, this is wrong."
That definitely would increase the budget of the class. I think the per credit hour cost would then be a little prohibitive for most students.
Maybe.
Oh, my God. On the storytelling, is your mention, there is hopefully a sequel will be coming forth as well. Is there any other works you're working on that you can mention, or is it too early to even say anything about anything
else? Like I said, I'm juggling a couple more educational books right now that they'll be coming out around the same time. I've written a graphic novel textbook for the University of Chicago. Or co-written that with Matt Upson. And I've got a couple of digital projects, digital-only projects, that will be hopefully forthcoming by the end of the year. One of them is kind of a science fiction tribute to Jack Kirby, and the other is the continuation of Hooligan that we started with Viper and that we'll be finishing on our own.
Okay. But no horror properties or original stories in the works at this point in time?
Well, I mean, Hooligan's pretty much a horror comic. Okay. So it's just, it's a horror comic that kind of tends to trick people into thinking it's a superhero comic. Okay. But once they read it, they realize, no.
Gotcha!
Yeah.
And where are you more comfortable with? We mentioned you do both ends, you do artwork as well as writing. Is there one that's more comfortable for you than the other? Because this, to me, was very well written. I enjoyed it. It's fast-paced.
But it depends. I mean, I've put about the same amount of time and energy into trying to master both crafts. I don't think I have mastered either one, and I don't think I ever will. If I ever think I've mastered them, somebody shoot me, because I've turned into a pompous ass. But yeah, it's something. Both of them are skill sets that I appreciate for different reasons. My art style, I could never have drawn this book. It wouldn't have looked right. So, yeah, that's always my big thing. If it would look weird for me to draw it, I don't draw it. I'll find someone else to.
Okay. Well, when we first met, you was as an artist. I didn't realize you had writing credits as well, but
yeah.
With this and after reading it, keep doing it. It's good.
Thanks.
I like it. I think, is there anything else you gentlemen and lady want to ask before we sign off?
Is your publishing, do you have any Tijuana Bibles lined up?
I don't. although it might be kind of funny to do some of those someday. A weird little anecdote, I was once hired to draw some fetish comics, but the assignment was so weird I wasn't able to finish the assignment. So, I don't know that I'll be doing a Tijuana Bible anytime soon. Let's just put it that way.
I've heard rumors that some of the classic comic artists would use pseudonyms and then do Tijuana Bibles on the side to make extra money. I don't know if that's true or not.
It's absolutely true. In fact, well, I'm not sure who all I should mention. But it's absolutely true, and there are certain communities that will pay premium prices for comics these days that never actually make it out to a wide audience. And they pay quite well. I'm just saying.
And how do you know that? No.
Because some people told me.
Probably the people that tried to hire him for one.
But yeah, I mean, just look up Superman fetish comics. I'm just saying, and you'll be surprised at what you see.
Oh yeah, that's just down at Hastings, right?
Chris, stay off the internet.
Let's look that up real quick.
Hey, we got a filter. Yeah. We'll see how many of it is actually blocked.
There you go.
There are some things you can't unsee, so be careful.
Yes.
True, very true.
Tumblr.
Tumblr. God.
Isn't there a famous website called DeviantArt that has a lot of the weirder sci-fi stuff?
Almost everybody's
there. They have everything.
So. Are you on there, Mike?
Yeah, it's much better than using a lot of these sites for your gallery, because they don't resample the image in such a way that it looks really crappy. Most people have have some kind of deviant art gallery.
What's that reflection in your glasses, Mike?
He's looking up his account.
I'm actually looking. I'm trying to look up a reference for you for the Superman fetish art.
He literally is.
How do we find your artwork on DeviantArt?
Let me grab that address really quick because I don't have it memorized. See, I suck at marketing. That's not my thing.
That's all
right. cmichaelhall.deviantart.com. You'd think I'd remember that.
I've checked it out.
Yeah, that's kind of going to be the same all the time, right?
Yeah, yeah. My name.deviantart.com.
Yeah.
You'd think.
Hey, it's been
pretty easy.
It's been a relaxing evening, let's say.
Yes.
Well, he also has probably had about 3 beers by now.
Well, I was trying to say that nicely.
Can you add all these links to show notes?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So we'll add the links.
Definitely. Michael, whenever you can, we'd be glad to have you back on. It's a blast.
Fantastic. I've had a good time.
It's a blast. We like to have fun, and you're definitely a fun person to talk with, and you give as good as you get, so we appreciate that.
I try. That's what the beer is for.
And you'll have to, I don't know, we'll let you know when everything comes out, and I'll send you emails.
Okay, cool.
We're a little backlogged right now.
Oh, that's all right.
We've got about I just put one up. We have 2 other interviews.
That's all right. I'm not worried about it.
So, but I will definitely email you to let you know when they're actually out.
Okay, and for those of you who are going to be at KLA this year, I'm actually putting together something special just for KLA.
Ah.
So cool. You'll want to make sure and come to my presentation.
Okay, cool.
Feeling sick, Matt?
I don't think I could make it to KLA. It might be a little obvious.
Well, maybe he can, put Skype on his iPad and just hold it up so you can see all the artwork.
There you go.
That's how my sister went to my brother's funeral because she was sick in the hospital. So she just looked at the iPad and we held up to the casket and, yep, he's dead, and moved on.
New way to use technology.
I think I'd rather skip it completely than,
she wanted to see it, though. I mean,
have them wheel her out there.
She couldn't. It was like her immune system was down, so they had to keep her isolated.
Okay.
So that was the only way she could, go to the funeral and the burial and all that.
Bubbles for that.
Was via iPad and Skype.
Oh, that's a good one, Logan. There's bubbles for that.
see what we end up with here.
Jeez. But yeah, and you'll have to shoot me an email or I'll shoot you one. And yeah, definitely interested in those. If you have any issues left over, definitely interested. If not, I think I can get them from Ape, but if I can get them from you, I'd rather help you and support you as well.
All right, cool.
Just don't charge me too much.
Oh, I won't.
How much is your signature worth these days?
So you don't have to worry about that.
How much is your signature worth these days?
I don't charge extra for it. I just charge whatever the book cost and whatever it costs to ship it.
Well, shouldn't you charge for the amount of ink used?
I probably should, but I buy my ink in bulk, so I don't really worry about it.
Oh, okay.
Write it in that puff paint.
Oh, you mentioned your collector to a degree as well. Do you still have a bunch of comics as well, like I do, or is it?
I don't have nearly as many individual issues as I used to. I think my collection peaked at around 17,000, okay. And I started. I realized, fuck, I'm buried in comics. So I liquidated a lot of them and started. I started replacing a lot of the things I really liked with hardcover editions.
Okay.
And so yeah, I have about. Let's see, there's one, two. I have four bookcases full of hardcovers and trade paperbacks, but I'm down to maybe eight or nine long boxes of individual issues.
Okay.
So it's a much more manageable collection than it was back at the peak of my collecting addiction.
About how much do you have, Dad?
I'm probably getting close to 12,000 now or so.
So he's only 5K below you.
Oh, but I'm nowhere near that anymore. I mean, I got rid of a lot of those. So, yeah, I'm down to probably maybe 3,000 tops.
Okay. See, I just like the individual issues. I mean, I like the graphic novels, but, you know, I grew up with individual issues. So pulls on my heartstrings, I guess you'd say.
I do like them. And, you know, if it's a title that I feel really needs my support in the marketplace, I will definitely buy the individual issues, but my favorite way to read comics is actually in hardcover. Yeah.
See, I'm the opposite.
It's less likely they'll break if you do it in hardback.
Do what?
It's less likely they'll break if you do it in hardback.
True.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. You know, they look nice on the bookshelf. You know, you don't. It's yeah. I like. You can loan them out without having to worry about whether or not your friend is going to eat Cheetos before he reads the damn thing. Yeah.
I have a sad story to tell. We used to have like a hardback edition of the original Fantastic Four, and my sister tore it up because she was a little kid and didn't realize how valuable it was.
Wait, you trusted it around the little kid?
My parents, you know, if it was a book, anybody had access to it because they wanted everybody to read.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
And so, I thank him for their push for literacy, but man, Fantastic Four.
The only issue I have that I like of Fantastic Four is 50, because I'm a big Silver Surfer fan.
Yeah, the Galactus trilogy, 48, 49, and 50.
Yeah, my sister got me issue 50 for Christmas one year, and I was like, oh, very cool.
Yeah, right. I'm not a big Surfer fan, but I'm a rabid Jack Kirby fan. So that's, those are good issues right there.
Well, when you and Matt get everything worked out with your book for Chicago, was it Chicago University you said?
Yeah.
Let us know, and we'll get you both on here. And
okay, cool.
Have you visited with us about that? And like I said, anytime you want to just jump in, just shoot me an email, or I can tell you what we're talking about. And if you want to join, we'd be glad to have you on again. This is fun. Or just talk in general.
Yep, good time.
All righty, Michael. Appreciate everything you've done for us.
You bet.
All right.
Bye.
Have a good one.
Talk to you all later.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library.
We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.